Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. A happy Monday morning to you. Here's my number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Feel free to call that number now. We have space available at this moment. It won't last that long, though. 888-914-9149. I have a note here that came in a while ago from Eugenio, listening on the Relevant Radio app, and he says, Patrick, he says, trust me when I say I'm a fan and an avid listener of your show. It's difficult for me to start my day without the Patrick Madrid Show to keep me informed and educated on relevant topics and discussions about our beloved faith. With that being said, he says, and I appreciate that, Eugenio, thank you. He says, it really bothers me to hear your comments regarding COVID-19. Yes, you are correct in not being a fan of it, and you are entitled to your opinion. Honestly, I have never heard you say a positive thing or a word about the vaccine. I'll tell you one reason why. Well, I've said many words about it, Eugenio, but one reason is because the topic of the vaccine itself, as you, I'm sure, remember, was so divisive that people lined up immediately on their sides and their tribes and their viewpoints. And so what I have found through experience is that sometimes it's best just to not tackle a topic that half of the people listening are just going to stop listening, because it just happens that way. So when you say you didn't really hear me say a word about the vaccine per se, it would be more or less for that reason. So he says, as a devoted Catholic and medical professional, this tears to my heart. I have worn a mask for years. I have never complained of the inconvenience. The way I and other medical professionals feel is simply this: wearing a mask not only protects you, but more importantly, it protects the patient and the immunocompromised. We wear the mask for you because we care about your well-being and health. Bottom line, I only hope and pray that you can say one positive word or comment regarding the vaccine and the mask. Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you, Eugenio. I appreciate your thoughtful note, and thank you for spending time to send that to me. I think I've said this who knows how many times on the program. Cyrus, you'll have to back me up if you think I'm right on this. I think I am. But I have talked about how glad I am that in, say, an operating theater, that the nurses and the physicians wear masks. Because to the extent that breathing could put germs into someone's body who's being operated on, it's good that they wear masks. I'm glad that they wear masks. I have nothing against masks per se. But I do remember, Eugenio, and perhaps you do as well, because I did talk about this on the program, that at the outset of the COVID-19 pandemic, the Surgeon General of the United States, Jerome, and I'm forgetting his last name, he was very public in early 2020, very public on social media, and I quoted from some of his social media posts as saying, guys, listen, the kind of masks that you're buying don't work. The size of the virus is way smaller than the size of the perforations in the mask, and it can just come right through it. So you're not really preventing that from passing through one way or the other. And I figure, here's how I look at it. You know, regardless of your politics, if you are bright enough to make it to the top spot government-wise in terms of medicine, if you're the Surgeon General, you have to be pretty smart. You have to be pretty well-educated. You have to know your field well enough to rise to a level where you could even be considered for that kind of position. So again, regardless of one's politics, the fact is here you have one of the top, and in this case, the top medical professional, who is admonishing people, as were a number of other people in those days, saying that the masks don't work, they're not necessary, you don't need to wear these masks. In fact, Cyrus, we played a montage at one time, I don't know where it is now. Remember that montage of like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and all sorts of big people saying you don't need to wear masks, they don't work. And then suddenly the switch flipped, and suddenly now that was the new religion, and everyone had to wear masks. The same kind of masks that we were told don't work. Now, yes, I know about the aerosolization, and I know about sneezing and coughing and the way in which just germs in general can spread. I'm familiar enough with that science, and I don't balk at that. But even like the, what was it, the Journal of American Medicine or the Lancet, one of those two, long about May or July, perhaps it was, of 2021, I quoted on the program, was saying that these masks don't work. And it was involving studies, clinical trials and such, that they, that this peer-reviewed top-shelf journal was saying the same thing. And then it gets shouted down. So I don't know. I don't know what to think, honestly, Eugenio, not about what you're saying. And you asked for a kind word about the vaccine. I'm afraid I'm fresh out right now. And if you look up things like died suddenly, it kind of puts a damper on one's ardor for something that, although everybody was told they had to get it, you'd be thrown out of the military, you'd lose your career, you'd get fired from your job if you didn't get the vaccine. And now, look, they're backing away from that now. They, who's they? Well, a lot of the same people who were insisting that you had to get it then are now saying, well, maybe not so much. So those are my thoughts. I'm glad in a way that we haven't had to talk about it at all. Aren't you glad, Cyrus, we haven't really had to talk about that?
Even the great wise Bill Gates, as soon as he dropped all of his stock in Pfizer and the vaccines, he even came out and said, yeah, they don't do anything.
Yeah, they just, we were wrong, I guess.
As soon as it stopped making him money, he changed his tune. So,
yeah.
I mean, over the last 3 years, we were lied to about masks. We were lied to about the lockdowns. We were lied to about natural immunity.
I remember herd immunity was a big thing. Oh, flatten the curve. Let's get herd immunity.
Flatten the curve. We were lied to about that. Mm-hmm. But whatever they're selling us now, they must be telling the truth now, right?
Yeah. And you know the sad thing, and I really do mean this sincerely, is that how it's like the boy that cried wolf, the old parable, the boy that cried wolf, and he was always crying wolf, and people would come rushing to find where's the wolf, and it was just, you know, not real. And eventually, when there really was a wolf, and the boy cried wolf, and the people didn't bother because they, you know, like, that guy's always lying to us. Yep. He's always putting us on. We're always falling for it. So when there really was a wolf that came and ate the sheep, the townspeople ignored him because they were so used to being let down. It's like Lucy with the football and Charlie Brown. You know, this time she's going to hold the football. I know it. And every time she pulls the football away and he trips. People have, I think a lot of people, rightly or wrongly, accurately or inaccurately, they have developed that kind of cynicism, which the reason I say this is sad is because I'm sure there will be a time when many of the same people, or at least people in the same positions, are going to say, no, this is really serious. For real this time, this is really serious. And a lot of people will just blow it off because, like the boy that cried wolf. And that's not going to be good.
And then on the other side, there are a lot of people that are Charlie Brown. And they're like, Lucy's going to hold the ball for me this time.
For sure.
She's definitely going to hold the ball for me.
And if somebody tells you, wait a minute, she never really holds the football, you're told you do not know what you are talking about. You know, you get that response from
you
people.
You do get that response.
Some people, anyway.
I wish I should have had that ready. I was actually concentrating on what you're saying instead of thinking about little bells and whistles.
Yeah, well, the bells and whistles are important. This note comes in from Danielle. She's listening, and a few of these came in a while back. So if I'm just getting to your emails now, please don't be offended. There's a stack taller than Cyrus, believe me. This one, Danielle is listening in, where's she? She's in North Windham, Maine. Shout out to all of our Maine listeners. Patrick, she says, I appreciate your efforts in revealing current issues within our culture today. You've inspired me to be more vocal about several issues. I've been listening to your talks about social media, and especially TikTok. There's a lot of terrible things being displayed on social media, many evils. I have recently chosen to utilize social media for the sole purpose of sharing light and love and some light humor. My daughter, who is in her early 20s, Catholic, is also using social media to spread the word, and she gives me her handle on TikTok so I can go check it out. And she says, and this is Danielle herself, the mom. She says, I have a TikTok account and I'm trying to spread the word through all platforms. I use Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram for this purpose. Thank you for all you do. She says, you inspire me. Well, thank you so much, Danielle. I appreciate hearing that. Glad to know that it's helpful to you. Here's my take on this. First of all, I endorse your strategy that you want to be where the people are, because that's where the people are. The people are on social media, no doubt about it. Everybody's looking at their phones. I pulled up to a four-way stop in an intersection over the weekend, and the guy next to me was looking at his phone. The guy in front of me was looking at his phone. I couldn't quite see into the cars across the intersection, but I'm pretty sure those people were looking at their phones. Even when we're driving, it's tempting to look at your phone. Or you pull up to the stop sign and you know you've got 30 seconds before the light turns green. What do? You look at your phone. So, you know, exhibit A would be the fact that everybody is looking at their phone. So the reason I endorse your strategy is because if you can pump out information, encouragement, truth that will help people, you might as well go where they are and where they're looking for things, because you have a high likelihood of reaching them with that. So I think it's a good thing. It's not a good thing, however, and I know you know this, so I don't need to sell you on this point, but it's not a good thing for the people who are just absorbing mindless nonsense endlessly. I mean, funny videos. I like funny videos. Cyrus, I send you funny videos from time to time because they're funny. But if you have a steady diet of just nothing but that kind of stuff, and let's face it, a lot of people do nowadays, it stunts their growth. It stunts their intellectual growth. I would be interested in a survey. Cyrus, if you ever go into a different line of work, and I really hope you never do, but if you did, why don't you start like a polling company, like Pew Research or one of those? And I can send you polling ideas. One would be to find out how many people who spend X amount of hours or more each day on social media, how many of them have read a book in the last year? Mm-hmm. I would be very interested in that, partly because I'm an author. and book sales are not doing so great anymore because so many people, they're not looking at books, they're looking at their phones. So put that in your
young you know, people aren't reading books. That's for sure.
That is true.
Less than ever anyway. I mean, it's like pulling teeth trying to get my kids to read a book.
Here's a way you can find this out for yourself, everybody. If you're having a conversation with somebody, just casually say, what's the title of the last book you read? What's the last book you read? Actual book. And I suppose if it's on Kindle, that would count. You're still looking at your phone, though. What's the last book you read? I'll bet you, and I have no anecdotal evidence to support this, but it's my hunch, I'll bet you probably 8 out of 10 people wouldn't be able to answer that question because they don't remember the last book that they read. So I'm not, I mean, what's the old saying, Cyrus? What do they say back in the old country? No heat, no judgment, something like that. No heat, no judgment, but... Back to your email, Danielle. I think this is good that you're doing that. So you can be there for those people.
No heat, no Rogan. Judgment.
That's how they say it. Let me hear that again.
No heat, no judgment.
That's right.
So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
Because why? Will I get cut off if I disobey the rules? Is that what
you
happens?
You do not know what you are talking about.
He's back in the building, Cyrus.
You can't keep
how
him
does
out.
He gets it. I thought we revoked his key card. He's back.
He has powers.
He comes in, he says that, and then he leaves. He won't even stay for a convo.
Hey, I have an email that is kind of in line. So last week you were talking about Facebook and how dangerous it is. I think we had someone called in, or it was an email about their husband finding an old flame or something like that. Do you remember that?
Was it the husband who found the old flame or the wife whose old flame?
That's it. The wife's old flame contacted her. And
that's right. I do remember that one.
So here's an email. This is from Jim. And he says, along with access sharing of all email and social media accounts, my wife and I have a joint Facebook account. So when you look at our account, you'll see pictures of us together, hopefully looking happy. And we both post to the same account and even at times respond to each other's posts.
That's smart.
And let's see. So you'll see pictures and posts about our journey. And being bold about your faith on social media will not only let others know that you are, let's see, you are bold to be left alone, but we feel that we are also evangelizing.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. The idea of a married couple having a joint Facebook account so both of them can see what either of them is posting or whatever, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, and the friend request, they'll both see it. Mm-hmm. You know, leave all the cards on the table.
Those old flames are out there. I mean, it's not as though every single one of them is going to pose a problem, but there are those out there who are actively looking for their old flames. And, you know, under the wrong situation, the wrong circumstances, that could turn out pretty badly. Hey, on a social media note, we're going to take a break and then we're going to go to your phone calls, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Talk about the pursuit of triviality. And this is a tragic story. A male model, he died, and you can probably guess what I'm going to say next, taking a selfie because he was wanting to promote his look online. His name was Jeff Thomas. He was, how old was he? He was a young guy. Let me just read you the article, and this is from the New York Post. Luli Batista, the Mr. Thomas's agent, said that the late model died from a fall while taking a selfie. Some people thought it might be suicide because it was a tall building. She says, no, there's no way that he intentionally did this. She was addressing the tragedy that came to light this past week after authorities found a 35-year-old's body at the bottom of an apartment complex. This was in Miami. Some people who were there, they were speculating that he looked as though he fell while he was taking a selfie. The two had been engaged in a friendly text conversation in which he had been joking about an upcoming audition. They had even scheduled a call to discuss his moving to Miami in a new venture that he was starting. He couldn't wait to tell her all about it. Doesn't sound like a guy who was suicidal. She said he seemed thrilled and was proud of himself. He was happy, motivated, and excited for his next step. He was just loving life. This is why I'm so stunned, she said. So long story short, he's, you know, on a what it looks to me to be like a terrace or maybe a patio on this tall building. And he was posing for selfies. And he tripped and fell or tipped over or whatever, and he fell. So he's not with us anymore is the point. And in pursuit of internet fame. So I don't like to bring you sad stories, but if nothing else, may he rest in peace. But this is a cautionary tale, if you ask me. I'll tell you that. Right, Cyrus? I'll tell you that. You heard me say that. So just word of the wise, be careful and don't allow trivial pursuits to put you in danger. I think that sort of goes without saying. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We're going to go to your phone calls. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code PATRICK for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
Hello. Hello again.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Real life solutions you can believe in. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Isn't it great to spend this time together? I love it. I really love it. Thank you for listening. 888-914-9149. I'm here for you. If you need a second opinion, need some advice, got a question, whatever. 888-914. Trying to time it for the end of the song. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Connecticut and talk to Patricia. Hello, Patricia. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Patrick, for taking my call.
Happy to.
My question is, how can I explain to my husband that it's not right to have his son? He was previous marriage, okay. And he had two children from this marriage, and one of them is living with his girlfriend, who's now pregnant. So they were over the weekend. Well, he was over the weekend at home without her.
He being the son?
Exactly, the son.
Okay.
And but the plan was that they both wanted to come and stay in one of our guest rooms. So I told my husband that they could come, obviously, but they had to sleep in separate bedrooms mm-hmm. for the fact that they're mm-hmm. not married. Something that obviously made my husband upset. And I need to know how I can explain him or how can, you know, tell him that this is really wrong just for the fact to let them sleep in the same bathroom. Mm-hmm. It's like approving, you know, from our side right. that is okay, which I do not agree.
Right. Well, the simple way to answer it, I think, is to say, you can ask him a series of questions. Do you believe that Jesus is God? Do you believe in Jesus? Yeah. Do you believe that Jesus is God? Well, yeah. Do you believe that Jesus would lie to you? No. So when Jesus said that if a man even looks at a woman with lust in his heart, he's already committed adultery with her in his heart. I mean, he's saying that that's already bad, but how much worse would it be if you acted upon this idea and all the things that Jesus talks about where he says, you know, to keep the commandments. I have not come to abolish the commandments, but to fulfill them. One of the commandments, of course, is the sixth commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. And that encompasses all kinds of sexual sins. It's not just, strictly speaking, adultery between parties, one of whom or both of whom are married but not to each other. I mean, it includes fornication and all the other kinds of sexual sins. So if you ask him these questions, do you believe in Jesus? Yeah. Do you believe he's God? Yeah. Do you believe he would lie to you? No. So then when Jesus says these things, like don't do these things, they're bad for you, it's not for you if you're not married, then why on earth would you allow your son to do something that you know very well is a sin? Why would you do that? The reason I'm proposing this, Patricia, is that if you ask in the form of a question, then he has the responsibility to, even if not for you, in his own mind, he has to answer this question. And when you ask a why question, this is another interesting thing about rhetoric. If you're challenging somebody and you ask a why question, why did you do this? Why did you think this? Why didn't you do this? It's a very pointed way of, in a way, kind of forcing the person to confront the issue. Why did you do this? Mm-hmm. Go ahead. You go ahead.
I guess I already tried to explain him, and actually he agreed in the beginning that was not right, because I gave him the example, like, if we would have a daughter, would you let her go to her boyfriend's house and stay there to sleep? And he says no. Okay, well, it's the same situation. Just think about that girl, if she's your daughter.
That's a great way to ask
him. With me. But the fact that she's now pregnant and they're going to have a son, he thinks that makes the relationship more allowed, like mm-hmm. to sleep together. And I try mm-hmm. to explain him that is not true. But it's hard for him to understand that. So I don't know what else to do.
Well, I'm trying to choose my words carefully here. So to be candid, it sounds like he has some real challenges when it comes to understanding morality mm-hmm. because of some of his own life decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my only concern is now that the baby's going to be, you know, with us soon, hopefully God willing. You know, this is going to be more often, and I just don't want to think about the arguments that we're going to be in the same situation, because I know that he is going to permit them to come at home, you know, in the state, and I don't want that, because I told him, you know, they can come, but they have to sleep in separate bedrooms. That's all. Yeah.
And that's not unreasonable. you're just looking out for them and their immortal souls. Do either of those two young people practice the faith at all?
No, his two children are away from the faith. Now, this one, he's planning to get married, probably not at the church, but in the civil way. But I think that he will be in the same situation. So I don't know how I can manage, because I don't want to be fighting with him, and you know, because he has been always a point of discussion in our marriage.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think first of all, you're correct in your resolution to not allow it to happen. I don't know if he refuses to honor your wish on this issue, I'm not sure what your options are. I mean, you could go nuclear and say, well, then I'm leaving. I'm not advising that. The last thing I want to do would be to suggest a course of action that could further put a strain on this marriage. But short of that, I'm not sure what leverage you have. I mean, if he just refuses to go along with this and he's supporting his son and his son's girlfriend and the baby on the way. I mean, obviously you want to show compassion. You want to be kind to people, even those who are not living the way they should. So I understand your desire to be kind and compassionate. And that's good. But on the other hand, if your husband is in the position of materially cooperating with the sin that they're no doubt committing, that's how babies come into the world after all. Then, you know, that's on his soul, that's on his conscience. So if you're living in a home where you have said, I don't want this to happen, and you don't really have the leverage that you wish you had, and you're not going to walk out, you're not going to leave, short of that, I don't know what other options you have. Well, you're certainly not committing a sin. You've tried to do what's right. And if the circumstances are such that you have to live with this situation, even though you don't want to, you're not committing a sin. That much is for sure. You're not participating in this. So hopefully the more you can talk it out with him, the more he might be willing to listen to that. Play this segment of the show for him. You know, hey, I talked about this on the radio, and here's what that guy had to say about it.
Yeah, even our priest told him that was not right. But I guess he's feeling, because he lost his son and his children, obviously, you know, so much that he puts his feeling first. I think that he's moral. And I try to explain him that that's not right, because he has to love Jesus and his commandments first. And he always pointed that we all sin, so why shouldn't, you know, we have this compassion for his son? And I said, well, there's different,
it's not real compassion. We all sin. It's a kind of false compassion. Or a misplaced compassion, perhaps, that, I mean, if he's directly contributing to the damnation of his own son, you know, by fostering this kind of living arrangement, when he knows that it's not right, it's seriously wrong, that's not real compassion. That's false or misplaced compassion. And
thank you, Patrick. Thank you for your help. I'll try to share this with him, and hopefully it won't bring more discussion.
Got it.
Well, we're going to keep praying.
Yeah, that's the best thing to do. Keep praying and hope for something good to come out of your efforts to reason with him. Thanks, Patricia. Let's go to Eileen now in Delafield, Wisconsin. Good morning, Eileen.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
My call
is regarding yesterday's gospel reading of the curing of the blind man.
Yes.
And there was a phrase towards the end of that reading that I didn't understand, and I haven't been able to find an explanation on the internet. Okay. On chapter 35, when after the cured man had had been thrown out the second time by the Pharisees, Jesus heard of this. He sought him out and asked him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And he immediately answered, "Who is he, sir, that I may believe him?" I wonder, can you tell me what the Jews at that time believed about that phrase, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" That he immediately knew he was God?
Yes.
Son of Man, I would think Son of Man meant he was born of a woman and he was Anyway, that's my question.
Okay, well, it's actually a title. So the two titles that would have been, among the titles that would have been familiar to the Jews of that day would be Son of Man. Now, Jesus used that phrase about himself, and commentators like the Church Fathers have pointed out that that was a sign of the Lord's humility, even though his followers typically would not call him the Son of Man, but the Son of God. Even the centurion, played by Ernest Borgnine in Jesus of Nazareth, you may remember that from 1977, 78, even he, you know, he repeats the lines of the centurion at the foot of the cross, you know, truly this man was the Son of God. So by asking this man who had been born blind, do you believe in the Son of Man? And he answered and said, who is he, sir, that I may believe in him? Jesus said to him, you have seen him. The one speaking with you is he. So it was a kind of a, I don't want to say roundabout, because that's not really the right way to say it, but it was a way of asking him, do you realize who I am? And by identifying himself as the Son of Man, he was identifying himself as the Messiah, the long-awaited Messiah, the one who would come from God and liberate his people. So they knew that that title had the connotation of that role, that person who was coming.
Oh, and
so,
okay.
So Jesus was revealing himself to this man.
Well, that answered that question. It just seemed like in today's vernacular, it didn't make any sense to me. But, right. Well, thank you so much for that explanation. That cleared that up.
Happy to help, Eileen. Thank you. Yeah, it's... You know, what's interesting is that Jesus, in that passage, he heals the man's blindness in two ways. One, his physical blindness. Second, his spiritual blindness. He reveals himself. He unveils himself and his role as the Son of Man to this man. So his blindness was cured twice. Pretty cool, huh? That was a great reading. I was listening in rapt attention. I bet you were too. So much there. If you didn't listen to it carefully, go back and read it. John 9. Verses 1 through 41. And I see what you're doing, Cyrus. I like it. Two thumbs up and a snap of the fingers. Our sponsor, Christendom College, offers our listeners access to free online classes at getprinciples.com/truth. Acclaimed philosopher Dr. John Cuddeback is teaching a class now, Understanding Human Nature, at getprinciples.com/truth.
I love it.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show, coast to coast on Relevant Radio.
Okay, Monday morning on the Patrick Madrid Show. Hope you're enjoying it. I am. My number is 888-914-9149, and I do have lines open. Kind of unusual for a Monday morning, but look at that. If you called now, it'd get you on the air pretty quickly. You wouldn't have to wait forever. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Denise now in New Jersey. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning, Father Pat.
Oh, I'm not a priest. I'm a father in the human sense, but I'm not a priest.
Well, good morning, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Madrid.
Thank you.
Okay.
How can I help?
Yes, I was rehearsing with the gentleman before. I wanted to know, in the Bible, when I did study, I came across a line in the Old Testament about a fox, something about a fox. And I was wondering, I don't know where it is in the Bible, probably Psalms or something like that. But what does that mean? Stay away from fox. I was so afraid of Fox Channel 5.
Oh.
What does it mean?
Okay.
What does it mean?
Yeah, there's no need to fear. It's an animal that's being referred to. And when you say fox, I'm hearing you say fox, F-O-X. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're referring to?
Correct, sir.
Okay. So it's not a common animal. In fact, I'm only aware of it. Jesus mentions Herod as a fox, and that's in Luke 13. And I see here as I look that it's mentioned in Nehemiah Chapter 4, Tobiah the Amorite was by him, and he said, yes, what they are building, if a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall, referring there to the animal, and I guess the flimsiness of the structure. but it only appears a couple times in Scripture, at least in the Revised Standard Version. And if I looked in a few other different versions, it might appear the same number, or maybe one or two more. But that's all it is, just an animal, just like the fox that you would see running through a field.
Got nothing to do with being sly.
Well, yes.
Foxy ladies and foxy.
Yeah, no, it has to do with sly. So in Luke 13, verse 32, we see, well, let me read from verse 31. At that very hour, some Pharisees came and said to him, "Get away from here, for Herod wants to kill you." And he said to them, "Go and tell that fox, 'Behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I finish my course. Nevertheless, I must go on my way today and tomorrow and the day following, for it cannot be that a prophet should perish away from Jerusalem.'" So he refers to Herod as a fox, but my impression is that the Lord here is being somewhat, oh, I don't know. You know the old saying, like, you're too clever by half, you know. You're so smart that you're actually kind of dumb. I think that's what he meant by that.
Yeah, you're not giving the glory to God either.
Well, I suppose so. So anyway, I hope that helps, Denise. That's what I see in Scripture. Not too much about the animal, but no need to fear a network affiliate station just because that same name is there. Thank you. Let's go to Joe now in Passaic, New Jersey. Hi, Joe.
Yes, good morning, Patrick. Got to thank you for setting me free a long time ago. Anyway, today is St. Joseph's Day, as we all know. It is also Father's Day in Poland, which leads me to my question. Do you think that Jesus called Joseph father?
I'm sure of it, yeah.
Well, the reason I ask that is because you always hear the our Protestant brothers saying, no, call no man father. So I figured that kind of, I've heard everybody address that, but Jesus called Joseph. So.
You fox, Joe. You're very crafty. No, I'm just joking with you from the last caller. No, yeah, that is true. In other words, if in Matthew 23, verse 9, Jesus literally meant, do not call anyone father, although we don't have any biblical mention of him actually addressing St. Joseph as father, we have all the apostolic writers at one point or another addressing various people as fathers. Our father Abraham, I'm speaking, St. John says, to you fathers, or St. Stephen in Acts chapter 5, when he's about to be martyred, he addresses the Jewish leaders as my fathers and brothers, listen to me, as a formal form of address. So truly, if Jesus meant literally, don't call any man father under any circumstances, it'd be impossible to reconcile all those other places where these significant people call men father. So that clearly shows us that in Matthew 23:9 that that's not what Jesus meant in a strictly literal sense.
Okay, and happy Father's Day to you and everybody who's a father at Relevant Radio.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate that very much. We're all very grateful to be here at Relevant Radio. Thank you for that. Let's go now to Camille in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hi, Camille.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Not too bad for a sinner,
You're
as
welcome.
I like to say.
Absolutely. So my question is, forgive my ignorance, but I haven't listened to Relevant Radio in a very long time.
What? Slow down.
I know, forgive me.
We've got to fix that.
That's what matters, right? I'm back.
Okay. You are back. That's all that counts.
My question is, I saw the advertisement for the Pope's Exorcist, the movie that's going to air or come out, I think, on April 14th. Are you, one, familiar with it, and two, if I can have your opinion?
I have seen sort of a glancing awareness of commercials about this, like on my phone, if I'm on social media, Twitter, for example, or in some other, like a news site. I have seen advertisements for this, but I have no intention whatsoever of watching it. But not because of the movie being bad or good. I don't know if it's bad or good. My personal policy is I won't watch anything movie-wise that involves demonic possession or demonic manifestations. And the reason is not that I don't believe in it, but I believe in it so much that my vivid imagination can conjure up these images at inconvenient moments, like when I'm alone in the dark or something like that. So I just learned from experience that I don't want any of those images or ideas in my mind. So I avoid those kind of movies. Absolutely. I would never watch it. I'm not saying that I don't think other people shouldn't watch it. I'm just saying for me personally, knowing my own limitations, that's why I avoid those kinds of movies. But there may be great merit in seeing it. I just don't plan to see it.
Okay, and I can respect that. If I may, a third, do you believe, as I believe, because I was on the fence of either watching it, because we know the world is in a very bad way, mm-hmm. that you could actually invoke the evil one into basically, I'm not saying your soul or your spirit, but just really, I guess, invoking him, if you will?
That's an interesting question. That is an interesting question. At first glance, and it would be interesting to ask a bona fide exorcist what his opinion is on this issue. So I can only go by my hunches. But my hunch would be no, because think about all the ways in which we, even in the Bible, you know, we read about the devil a lot in the Bible. Jesus is constantly casting out demons. So to read about him or to hear or see something about a demon, I don't think is a trigger that suddenly, you know, like lurch on the Addams Family, you rang, you know, I'm here, you
right.
rang.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think that this, again, this is just a hunch, so I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. I don't think those kinds of things are catalysts for the devil showing up. Now, they could okay. be, and let's say that somebody who is watching a movie like this becomes fascinated in the wrong kind of way with diabolical things and kind of warms up to the idea that maybe I would like to have this kind of experience. I know it sounds crazy, but maybe something that could be a catalyst for some people who are really looking at this the wrong way. But
I believe that can be enticing, because look at TikTok and all their little trends, and they entice people and people seem to want to jump on the wagon, if you will. Well, I appreciate your candor today. You have a blessed Easter, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Camille. I appreciate that, and glad to know you're back. See, Cyrus, I always know when I'm being dismissed. I can tell when the conversation is over.
You rang.
Ah, I wondered if you would find that. Talk about a deep voice. Let me hear that again.
You rang.
Yeah, that was pretty deep. That's a radio voice right there. 888-914-9149. How about Maria now in McMinnville, Oregon? Did
yes,
I say it right? McMinnville?
Yes, you did.
Okay. All right.
I know it's kind of hard to pronounce, but so I'm having an issue. So I just recently started working at a grocery store, and this particular grocery store sells everything from groceries to furniture to everything. It's like a one-stop shop, I guess,
okay.
In a little town like here. So I did not know, I would have never even thought of that, you know, mixed in with groceries are, you know, clothes and, you know, and we live in a college town. And I noticed that a lot of young people are buying the Plan B bill, pill. And I mean, they come and buy groceries or things for their house. And then their mix is a Plan B pill. And I can't just say, oh, I can't ring this up because I'm already in the middle of a transaction. So like they're buying their food and then they buy that. And then it's just like, I'm struggling with that. Like, I don't know if I should say something to my manager and say, you know, like when it comes to things like that, I have to put it to the side and have you ring it up. But then it's just like, I'm just struggling. So what do I don't know if I should bring this up in, or, you know, because I have sold it. I just inside of me say a prayer for this person. And if, you know, I don't know, I'm morally struggling with it. So what do you recommend?
And first of all, it's really good that you're having this moral struggle, because that's a sign that your conscience is functioning the way it should function. So that's good. I mean, you should be happy that you have this awareness of the problem. So fundamentally, what you're looking at here is your participation in what the moral theologians would call approximate cooperation, meaning that you're close to it. You're really, really close to the evil of the act, not because you're doing something evil, but you're facilitating in a direct way something that would be wrong for people to do. And even though you're not, you don't want to do this, your conscience tells you this is wrong, you may even have voiced this with your boss, you realize that you're still, by ringing it up and putting it in the bag, you're facilitating something that you know is wrong. So if you were to substitute the Plan B pill for something else, let's say a pornographic magazine, and you know, somebody brings that up, and what do you do? I mean, if you ring it up, you could say, well, I'm just doing my job. Yeah, that's true. But it's also kind of facilitating somebody doing something that would be morally objectionable. So the easiest way, if you ask me, Maria, to handle this would be to, and I'm not trying to be glib here, but find another job. And finding another job is not in itself necessarily easy. But if you wanted to be free from any scruples, free from any nagging worry, or you know, having to have that heavy heart when you're at the cash register and the person brings that stuff up, you know, each, just think about each time you'd have to go through that over and over and over again. And if you want to be free from that, the easiest way would be to just find a different job where you could work for a company that doesn't sell something that's morally problematic. Then you've avoided the problem and you have a clear conscience. And my guess is that, you know, in the economy the way it is right now, it shouldn't be too difficult to find a comparable job, maybe even a better job.
Yeah, it's just, it's really hard because, well, first of all, I lost my job. I used to work in the corporate world and I had a toddler at home. So my husband works during the day. And then this is the only job really that, you know, they're open until 11. I can work an evening shift. So, and I live in a little town that, you know, it's,
there aren't a lot of options.
So I just struggle in, you know, I mean, the like you said, like the economy. I think what my best option would probably be is to bring this up to my boss and say, I'm going to have to put this to the side and ring up all the other groceries and call you to finish this transaction. I'm going to make.
They do that with kids under the age of 18 in grocery stores. Where if you have a 17-year-old cashier at the grocery store, she can't ring up that box of wine. You know, let's say you rolled through with a box of wine. Well, she can't ring it up. She has to ring up the eggs and the bread and the butter and call somebody who's over 18 to come over and swipe that item. So it's not unheard of. It's a different kind of thing because obviously it's not an issue of morality. But that would be my second suggestion, Marla, would be to see if you could – you know, just, can I just do something different? Can I stock shelves or can I, you know, do something else and not have to ring this up? But even then, it still pushes it another, it pushes it further back, but it's still there. Because if you're stocking shelves, you'll be stocking that at some point. And I remember I worked in, just for what it's worth, Maria, because I had to wrestle with this myself. I worked in retail for some years when I was a whole lot younger. And there was one retail company I worked for that, among many other things that they sold, they actually sold Ouija boards. And the thing of it was that at the time, I didn't know, I didn't realize this is a problem. So it never entered my mind. I never thought about it. So like when the box of Ouija boards would come in off the truck and I'd stock it on the shelf next to the Milton Bradley games, it never crossed my mind. Only afterward, when I was no longer working that job and I became aware of the problem with Ouija boards, then for me, it was just like a hypothetical. Well, if I had known then what I knew, what I know, if I had known then what I know now, what would I have done? And I can understand your conundrum because I needed that job. That's how we paid rent, you know, and that's, it was so important. And so I look back on it and think, well, if I had known then, I would have had to make a decision because I couldn't have said, stop stocking this item because the company's going to say, buzz off. You know, if you don't like it, don't work here. But I never had to go through that personally. Anyway, Maria, those are my thoughts. And I admire you for really grappling with this issue. It's an important one. Thank you. I'll be right back.
You're right.